The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
History tells the story of the world and of our lives. Sometimes that history goes bump in the night. Broadcasting from the center of oddity and the supernatural in Central Florida, it's the History Goes Bump podcast.
Hello, you spooktacular people. Welcome to this 448th episode of the History Goes Bump podcast, Ghost Tours for the Theater of the Mind. I'm your host, Diane.
And this is Kelly.
Kelly, on this episode, we're going to be covering haunted Fayetteville, North Carolina. This is a location we just got done visiting not too long ago.
We certainly did.
This was the first stop on our road trip for 2022. There's quite a few haunted locations here that we're going to share with you guys. Before we get into that, we want to welcome into the spooktacular crew, Michael, Candace with a C, Kimberly P, and Kimberly M. Very popular name, and they both spell it the same way. Mamie, Christy, Jonathan, Lori, Lexi, and Catherine with a K.
Thank you so much for joining us in our Facebook group.
And now, this moment in oddity.
Some people have fears about the unknown in the deepest, darkest depths of our oceans. For many, this isn't the usual apprehension surrounding sharks and the like. One particular type of creature can be the fuel for nightmares. These are siphonophores. This is an order of marine animals in the phylum Cnidaria. Jellyfish are part of this phylum. The creature is made up of a complex aggregate colony of many nectophores. Each one is genetically identical. While jellyfish are single organisms that can swim, siphonophores are drifters that flow with the ocean currents. All the individual organisms work as one whole, some catching prey, some digest food, other parts reproduce, while some create the creature's own bioluminescent light. Similar to jellyfish, siphonophores are venomous, but rarely are fatal to humans, although their stings can be quite painful. Siphonophores are predatory carnivores that feed on copepods, krill, other crustaceans, as well as small fish. Each organism has an independent nervous system, but they do share a circulatory system. While some may find these creatures beautiful, I would surmise to say that if you were to Google images of them right before bedtime, you would have some terrifying nightmares because these creatures certainly are odd.
Up tight. That chill you feel isn't the air conditioning.
And now, this month in history.
In the month of August, on the 1st, in 1981, MTV launched. This was back when MTV was cool, and it was an awe-inspiring experience to have music videos featuring the hottest songs of the time. One of MTV's creators, John Lack, started the broadcast by saying, "Ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll." The channel then rolled out the first video, which was the Buggles' "Video Killed the Radio Star." This first broadcast was only seen in New Jersey, but soon enough, every house that had cable was able to get the channel, which revolutionized the music industry. It also pushed cultural boundaries and introduced interesting reality shows like The Real World. MTV introduced us to the term VJs rather than DJs. And who could forget Headbangers Ball, Celebrity Deathmatch, and Beavis and Butthead. Careers were launched and many top acts reached their pinnacle because MTV put them in heavy rotation. For us, the 2000s killed MTV by dumping music videos and running reality shows that are just plain dumb. By the way, Iron Maiden had the first heavy metal video on MTV.
Fayetteville, North Carolina was settled nearly 240 years ago and has witnessed much history in that time. The city has deep Scottish roots with pioneers immigrating from the Scottish Highlands. And while these roots leaned towards loyalty to the English, this town's revolutionary spirit was strong. The city has endured huge fires and Sherman's army and come out on the other side with a vibrant spirit and the motto, can-do spirit. And speaking of spirits, there are quite a few here. And we're going to take you along as we visit a few of them in our 2022 road trip. Join us for the history and hauntings of Fayetteville, North Carolina.
We rolled into Fayetteville a little bit, I think it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, something like that.
Sounds about right.
It was a long car ride.
Certainly was, all in one day from Central Florida.
But it was really cool because I had no idea the Scottish roots that were here. And it was mainly founded by Scottish immigrants in 1783. And I also didn't know, because it's not Lafayette, since it's Fayetteville, but it is named for the Marquis de Lafayette.
I had no idea as well.
The city was the first to honor him in this way, and Fayetteville was the only city named for him that he actually visited.
Oh, that's cool.
The carriage in which he arrived is still here and had been on display at the Fayetteville Independent Light Infantry and Museum, which has been permanently closed. So we couldn't go visit that location, but they do have an infantry that still gets together here, and I guess this is the museum that they'd opened up. But before the Scots made their way up the Cape Fear River to establish the settlements of Cross Creek and Camp Belton, which would combine to become Fayetteville, indigenous tribes of the Siouan people had inhabited the area. After the bloodiest colonial war in North Carolina, the Tuscarora War, and the Yamasee War, the Native Americans were pushed out as colonization was encouraged. Since many of the immigrants here were Scottish Highlanders, they remained loyal to the crown during the American Revolution. But there were patriots here, too, who created a document called the Liberty Point Resolves, which declared their support for liberty for the colonies. Robert Rowan was the leader of this group, and many places are named for him in Fayetteville. The second oldest militia company in the country is still active in the city, as I mentioned earlier.
Nearly all of Fayetteville was destroyed in the Great Fire of 1831. This fire started on May 29, 1831, just before noon. Residents came out of the church around noon and found the market square on fire. The fire had started in a kitchen at a house on the northwest corner. It spread quickly from rooftop to rooftop, burning 600 buildings by evening. The one fire engine was basically useless, and they abandoned it, and water buckets were of little help as well. Officials made the hard decision to start blowing up buildings in the path of the fire to give it less fuel and keep the flames from spreading.
I can't imagine having to make that decision.
No, not at all.
It's like, okay, we're going to start blowing up some of these houses because we don't want it to spread to the entire town.
Right. Pastor Roland wrote of his church, "The tall steeple of the Presbyterian church seemed a pyramid of fire. For a while, it stood firm. Soon the bell descended with a crash, and the steeple trembled, tottered, and fell. All the churches burned except for the Methodist church, 105 stores, a school, 2 banks, and 2 hotels. Thankfully, no one died in the fire. Fayetteville bounced back and rebuilt."
Yeah, so you can imagine these people just step out of church. They see smoke. There's a fire started. And the church that they were just worshiping in within a couple hours is going to be burned to the ground.
That's terrible.
But yeah, it's amazing to see that you had this huge fire and nobody died. So that's good. Plank roads were a thing in North Carolina for a while. I know they had them in other parts of the country, but they're really big here. These are roads built from wooden planks or puncheon logs and hit their boom from 1844 to the mid-1850s. Of course, you know me, Kelly. I read something, I'm like, what is that? I have to know. Puncheon logs are split logs with the face smoothed.
Gotcha.
One of the main plank roads was the Fayetteville and Western Plank Road. This stretched 129 miles from Fayetteville to Bethania, which was a Moravian village outside of Salem. Can you imagine laying all of those planks for 129 miles?
I absolutely cannot. That's quite a task.
And these were toll roads because they had to pay for all these planks that they put down. The tolls North Carolina charged were half a cent per mile for a horse and one rider, 2 cents per mile for a teamster with two horses, 3 cents for a teamster with three horses, and one with six horses was 4 cents. This road helped Fayetteville become a hub of trading.
The Civil War brought destruction to Fayetteville again. General Sherman brought 60,000 troops to town, and they destroyed the Confederate arsenal, cotton factories, foundries, and the offices of the Fayetteville Observer. Confederate Lieutenant General Wade Hampton got involved in a skirmish in downtown Fayetteville and killed 11 Union soldiers. Shortly after that, the Battle of Monroe's Crossroads commenced just outside the city. This was the last cavalry battle of the Civil War. The years after found Fayetteville growing rapidly, but things were not good for black residents as Jim Crow laws were adopted and racial segregation set in. The civil rights movement was robust here with marches and sit-ins. The military established Fort Bragg and Pope Air Force Base here. But of particular interest to us are the haunted locations in Fayetteville.
We had dinner downtown at a neat little place. It was just a little knockabout. It had a tin-type ceiling in it. And
it was great. Yeah. Great food and great ambiance. I loved it.
They had on the walls was a bunch of old pictures, I think, of the town back in the day.
Yes, they did. And they had some really cool industrial pendant lights that I'm considering purchasing for our kitchen.
I know. Kelly's like, I want some of those. We're going to put those in our kitchen. And we walked around the downtown and took some pictures down there. And when we were driving down there, we got to see some of the haunted locations that we're going to share with you guys. We did visit one of the places, and this place was the Museum of the Cape Fear Historical Complex. This historical site contains the Arsenal Park and the 1897 Poe House, which definitely caught my attention because I'm like, Poe? Poe? The United States arsenal that had stood here was commissioned after the War of 1812 and was completed in 1858. When the Civil War started and North Carolina seceded from the Union in 1861, a local militia captured the arsenal and turned it over to the state, which made it part of the Confederate States of America. Rifles, ammunition, and gun carriages were produced here until the facility was destroyed by General Sherman's troops in 1865. There's like a little museum that's there. And it's by donation, so they don't charge you anything. Just drop a couple bucks in the box. And they cover, like, the Native Americans that had lived in the area first and show you, like, who was there and what areas they were in. And then you go over to the other side, and it starts talking about the Scottish Highlanders that had come in and shown the clothes that they wore. And then it got into, there was, like, a grist mill, a miniature grist mill, showing you how that worked inside there and a lot of other little things to show you how Fayetteville was in the beginning. And then we went outside and you go across the bridge that goes across the interstate.
Right.
And that's where you get to where this Arsenal Park is at. And all that remains there are the ruins of the machine shops. And there's really not a lot to the ruins. It's like just kind of the stone foundations.
Exactly.
But it covered a large area. They were pretty big shops.
Yeah, they were. They were impressive size-wise because all it really showed you was the footprint. But they were much larger than I expected.
And they also had kind of the footprint, the ruins of the Southwest Tower. And then what they did is that they built this metal structure that's a recreation of one of the arsenals, what they call a ghost tower. And it probably was originally wooden. And this was used as a lookout. So it was cool to be able to see this because you could see how tall it was. It was up on top of the hill. So it would have been able to look down on Fayetteville. So it would have been a good lookout to see when Sherman's army was coming.
And they had four of those, correct?
That's correct. They had four of them there, and they just had recreated this one. And I love that they called him Ghost Towers.
Well, of course.
And we did put pictures of those up on Instagram. So if you didn't catch those during our trip, go back and look. We posted a bunch of pictures from our trip, and so you can see what that looked like. And it has this light at the very top of it, and it's lit up at night, and you can see it from downtown Fayetteville and Hay Street. So it shines pretty far away. An interesting piece of history about the arsenal is that 50 to 60 young women were employed here as cartridge makers. So their men were off fighting in the war, so this was their way of contributing back to the war effort, and it totally reminded me of like World War I and World War II.
Most certainly.
That the women were here working in the factories and stuff, producing the ammunition and all that other good stuff. They made up the bulk of the employees doing that job and were paid 50 cents a day, which I think was probably pretty good at the time.
Yeah, sounds like a really good rate, actually.
From January 1864 to August of that year, the arsenal produced 900,000 rounds of ammunition.
Good grief.
You know, that's one thing. We ended up going to Gettysburg, too, and you look at, like, all the uniforms that had to be made and all the weapons that had to be made and all the ammunition that had to be made to fight in all of these battles. And you don't stop to think, like, where is all that stuff made? This is back in the 1800s and stuff. So it is amazing the output that they were able to do where it was just human production.
And as Diane said, also located here is the 1897 Poe House that was built by E.A. Poe. And yes, his first name was Edgar, but he isn't that Edgar Poe. He was a local businessman and ran the Poe Brick Company. This is a two-story house done in the Queen Anne Victorian style with beautiful ornate gingerbreading along the first-story veranda and along a second-floor balcony. Edgar and his wife had 8 children. And he built 2 other homes on the property for his daughters, but they no longer stand. Someone who lived in the house for 3 years claims that there were many strange occurrences in the home, and they believe it was haunted. There's a historic graveyard here as well. The house offers tours, and during the Halloween season, they offer Invoking the Spirits, a Poe House Halloween. And they have a video of it up on YouTube, and we will include the link in the show notes.
Yeah, when we got there, it was too late for us to go do the tour of the house. So we just got to see the outside of it. And when you first come up to it, you're just looking at the back. And I was like, I thought it had all this like gingerbreading to it or something. So we drove around to the front on the main street. And that's when we got good pictures of it from the front. It's a cute looking little house.
It sure is.
But yeah, when I first was looking at it, I'm like, E.A. Poe? Is that like Edgar Allan Poe? But I'd never heard of him being anywhere around here. And then I was like, no, the name is Edgar. But then I read the rest of it and I'm like, no, it's not that one.
I know. Isn't that weird?
But it is weird to have another E.A. Poe out there.
And now on to Cool Spring Tavern.
This is located at 119 North Cool Spring Street. This is a federal style building that stands 2 stories with long verandas on both stories, a low hipped roof, and square Doric posts. Each side of the house has a large exterior brick chimney laid in Flemish bond with glazed headers forming chevron patterns. The interior has federal trim and follows a center hall plan 2 rooms deep. This was built in 1788 by Dolphin Davis and Nathan and Elisha Stedman and operated as a tavern until 1795. This is the oldest existing structure in the city. Elisha Stedman married and made the tavern his private residence after 1795. This was the Stedman estate until 1834, and then there were 5 different owners. In 1860, Alfred A. McKethan bought the house, and that family still owns the property today.
The state's constitutional convention was held here in November 1789 and included many members of the state legislature. The presiding officer of the convention was Richard Caswell, who had been the first governor of the state of North Carolina after independence. He lived at the tavern, and after toasting North Carolina becoming part of the United States, he retired to his room and suffered a stroke. He died 5 days later. Legend claims that his spirit haunts the tavern. Another legend claims that a young woman hanged herself in the attic and her apparition is seen walking around with a candle.
I'm not sure what the candle has to do with anything, but she can find her way, I guess, around the attic.
Perhaps.
And now a little break for a word about one of our sponsors.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This one we saw from a distance, the Prince Charles Hotel. This is located at 430 Hay Street and is now known as the Residence at the Prince Charles. The hotel opened in April 1925 under Carl and Richard Player and started as a seven-story building built in the Colonial Revival style with an Italian Renaissance-style palazzo and 125 rooms. The Players sold the hotel to Dr. R.L. Pittman and his son Raymond, and they added on to the hotel in 1942, providing 60 more rooms. It did well for a few years, but eventually turned into more of a flop house where rooms could be rented for $8 a night.
Oh, goodness.
I'm like, I can't imagine you go from this fine hotel to a flop house. The city of Fayetteville bought the Prince Charles in 1978 and later closed it. Despite not being in use, the hotel was added to the National Register of Historic Places in 1983. A developer came in to restore the hotel in the mid-1980s, but the hotel was closed shortly thereafter due to unpaid debts. Southern National Bank took possession of the hotel and sold it to a group of investors headed by Dr. Menno Pennink in 1992.
Radisson took over the management, but the bad luck this hotel had with owners just continued when the hotel was sold in 2004 to Choice Hotels and faced default in 2007. New York investor John Chen bought the property with grand plans of adding a tower and running the hotel as an apartment and office building. That never happened. Rather, this became a rent rooms by the month place, and the city shut it down in 2010 for code violations.
This place is starting to remind me of the Cecil Hotel.
Oh my.
You know, that it was once this really grand hotel and it's just going down the toilet.
Sure. Durham-based developer Jordan Jones bought the property in 2014 for $200,000 and rebuilt the interior as apartments and opened in 2019 as the Residences at Prince Charles. The spirit that has watched the comings and goings of all these different eras of ownership is said to be Charlotte. She was a bride who got married at the hotel and got the shock of her life when she walked into the honeymoon suite and found her husband in bed with one of the bridesmaids.
Scandalous.
She committed suicide by jumping out of a window and is usually seen riding the elevator to the 8th floor where the suite had been located. She likes to mess with the locks on the 8th floor also. The spirits of World War II soldiers were seen in a bar that had been in the hotel. Legend claims that a police officer was murdered on either the 4th or 6th floor, and he's said to haunt the hotel as well.
We didn't get inside this one, so I don't know if it still has a bar there in the lobby. I'm thinking since it's apartment buildings, that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, most likely not.
So I wonder if sometimes they might see these World War II soldiers sitting in the lobby in some way.
Could be.
Next, we have the Sanford House. Sanford House is part of Heritage Square, which is owned and operated by the Women's Club of Fayetteville, and it's located at 224 Dick Street. It's officially known as Fayetteville Women's Club. The house was built in 1797 by John McLaren and was designed in the colonial Georgian architectural style. Duncan McLaren later bought the house, but he didn't own it long and sold it to John and Sarah Adam in 1804. In 1820, the home became the first federal bank in North Carolina. The namesake for the house, John William Sanford, bought the house in 1832 and returned the house to a private residence, and he and his wife Margaret lived there with their seven children. Margaret died in 1860 and William remarried, and he stayed in the house until his death in 1870. It is believed that Sherman's troops used the house as a barracks during the Union occupation of Fayetteville in 1865. Former Confederate Captain John E.P. Dangerfield bought Sanford House in 1873. He had served as a clerk at the Harper's Ferry Arsenal during John Brown's raid. The captain went on to serve at the Fayetteville Arsenal. He and his wife Matilda had four children, one of whom became a celebrated North Carolina painter, Elliot Dangerfield. Fayetteville belle Lillian Taylor became the next owner of the house, with her husband A.H. Slocum. The last family to privately own the house was the Powells. They acquired the house in 1919 and stayed until 1941, and then the Women's Club of Fayetteville leased the property for 4 years, and they then optioned to purchase it and still own it today.
The club used the house to provide shelter for unmarried working women during World War II. The second floor bedrooms were turned into dormitory-style living, with 30 women packed into the rooms. The club also offered the lower floor for social functions.
And today, that's basically what they use it for, is social functions. Hauntings here began during the Civil War, and the legend connected to that time is that a young couple was trying to escape the house through a tunnel when they saw Union troops approaching. The tunnel was blown up, burying them, and the woman's ghost has been seen on one of the staircases. People call her the Lady in Black. The young man haunted the dormitory rooms. This spirit, the Lady in Black, could possibly belong to Margaret Sanford, though. She's thought to haunt the house because she died in the house and may have been worried about the care of her children, especially after William remarried. Want to make sure that the new lady of the house is taking care of them kids right. Another ghost appears as a young girl who wanders the hallways looking forlorn as though she's in mourning. She is said to be missing her sweetheart who was murdered before the Civil War and buried in a secret underground passageway that led to the Cape Fear River. The entrance to this passageway was in the bank vault because this house had once been the bank, so it had a vault there. And apparently there's a passageway that's off the back of it or something. Perhaps this is the tunnel the young couple was escaping through as well that supposedly were buried. Because I'm like, why is there a tunnel coming out of this house? People claim to see indentations on furniture when no one is sitting on the furniture.
Interesting. And now on to the Kyle House, which is located at 234 Green Street and was built by merchant James Kyle in 1855 and is one of the oldest surviving residences in the city. Kyle was Scottish and had come from Philadelphia to Fayetteville. So when he decided to build his home, he hired a Philadelphia architect and hauled materials by water from Philadelphia. These materials included handmade bricks and hand-hewn support beams. The house was made in the Greek Revival and Italianate architectural style, and features a hipped roof, a widow's walk, fluted Greek columns, wrought iron balustrade, and pilasters. Italian craftsmen created the intricate detail work inside the house. The walls were built with 18-inch thick walls lined with brick to provide fireproofing because the house that stood here before had burned down in the Great Fire of 1831.
18-inch thick walls. Whenever we read about these old houses with these huge thick walls, I'm like, golly, that was a lot of material.
Pretty incredible. There were four rooms downstairs and a formal staircase led up to four bedrooms on the second floor. An interesting aspect of the staircase can be seen on the octagonal newel.
For people who don't know what that is, that's like your first banister when you're going up the staircase. We learned in previous mansions that we've been in that you could take the top of that newel off and put important documents in there about the building of the house and that kind of stuff.
Right. It's inlaid with a six-pointed mother of pearl star builder's button that signifies that the house was paid for when completed.
I've never seen that in any of the houses that we've been in, so now I'm going to be looking for that.
I haven't either.
Never heard of a builder's button before.
The kitchen was in a building on the side yard.
Kyle didn't live in the house. Rather, he gave it to his daughter Margaret as a wedding present. She and her husband, Dr. J.F. Falk, lived in the house until after the Civil War and they moved to California. So James Kyle bought back the house and gave it to his younger daughter, Annie. And that's the way when I researched it that it read was that he bought back the house to give to his other daughter. And I was like, well, if he gave it to the one daughter, why would you have to buy it back to give it to the other one?
Maybe he did it to help them financially as they moved.
You know what? That could be the case. I hadn't thought about that. It's basically he gave them the money for the house so that they could move to California. After Annie was widowed, she took boarders in the house. The house stayed in the Kyle family until they sold it to the city of Fayetteville in 1963. And Kelly, the really cool thing about that is that this house has stayed in the Kyle family the whole time until they sold it to the city.
Yeah, it's kind of unusual that way.
Yeah. The city used the house as City Hall until 1991, housing the mayor's office and city administration offices. So that's how neat this house is that they wanted to turn it into a city hall. The house sits next to St. John's Episcopal Church, and they bought it from the city in 1991. They renovated the house, modernizing the kitchen and bathrooms, and adding a new corridor to connect the parish hall to the rear of the house, and opened it in 2002. The upstairs is used as classrooms, and the downstairs hosts events and meetings.
Stories of hauntings here have been told for decades. Many believe that James Kyle haunts the house, even though he didn't live in it, and they think he was unhappy that his daughter had used it as a boarding house.
He didn't want all those people coming through this house.
He's often seen going up and down the stairway. The former mayor, Bill Hurley, and his staff had machines that would turn on by themselves and furniture would move around. There were icy cold spots and noises that couldn't be explained. They often told stories of their spirited office environment. Former city manager Roger Stansel saw an apparition and felt cold spots in his office upstairs. During a candlelight tour, a volunteer suffered an awful chill that even a blanket and warm cider couldn't shake. She only lost the chill when she went outside of the house. A great-great-grandson of James Kyle Jr., had lived in the house until he was in his 20s, and he twice saw the ghost of his ancestor.
And lastly, we have the Vander light, which is another one of these ghost lights that people see out there. Legend claims that if you stand on the ridge where the old Vander Road crosses the railroad tracks and look to the east, you will see a light coming up the tracks. The light is said to belong to a lantern carried by a railroad worker named Archer Matthews, who'd been investigating a sound he heard along the track and he slipped, knocking himself out. He fell across the track and when the next train came, well, he lost his head. Now it appears with that lantern that he's looking for his lost head. Since the 1930s, there have been dozens of reports of people seeing that Vander light. Skeptics claim that methane gas and electrical charges cause the light, or perhaps there's some kind of a phosphorus gas compound that reacts to produce heat and light.
Or maybe it's a ghost with gas. You know, methane.
Kelly.
Fayetteville is an interesting city with a lot of history reflected in some of their historical structures. Are any of these places haunted?
That is for you to decide. Well, we don't have to say, hey, we should go visit. We did.
Yes, we did.
Now, they do have a ghost tour in Fayetteville, or at least there's a website that claims they have a ghost tour there. They also offer other historical tours, but when I tried to book it several times using different browsers, I could never get anything to go through.
And they didn't respond to our emails, so we just had to do our own.
Yeah, I sent them an email and I said, I don't know what's going on with your website, but I cannot get it to let me book a tour, and never heard from them. So I don't know if they're actually in business or not. So yeah, I said, well, then I'll just make up our own tour. And then this episode was created. It's a really cool city to go visit. If you guys are ever in North Carolina, I mean, there is so much stuff to see there. There was so much stuff for us to see everywhere. I cannot believe we were in 10 states in 8 days. And that's not including Florida, where we started. Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, and Massachusetts. And we had one of our listeners said that she's always had this dream of visiting all of the 13 original colonies. And we just about hit all of them on this one.
I think we only missed 3.
Yeah. It was a really great trip. It was a lot of driving. We got to meet one of our listeners, who
yes,
is also
indeed.
An executive producer, Gabrielle Monavici. I hope I said the last name right. I didn't ask her if that's how you say it. She and her daughter joined us for a ghost tour in Salem. We had a great time. It was a great ghost tour. Black Cat Tours. Highly recommend them. It's a husband and wife team. Really good with the history. And boy, could he tell a story.
Yeah, he was excellent.
We really loved Salem. It was our ultimate goal to get there because our son Jared had wanted to go see the USS Salem. So we got to see that down in Quincy. We had a bunch of happy accidents on the trip where we just ended up like here in Quincy. We decided to have breakfast before we went over to check out this cruiser. And we noticed there were these two historic homes across the street. So Kelly's like, we need to run over there and see what those are about because there's a sign over there next to them too. And I noticed that there was a trolley stop. So I'm like, they must have a trolley that goes around. So we go across the street and we're like, oh, and no big deal. These were just the birthplaces of two of our presidents, John Adams and John Quincy Adams. So we're like, oh my God. And then we're like, no wonder it's called like, I think it was like President Street behind the houses. So we're like, no wonder it's called that. So that was really cool to get to go over there and see those. We put those pictures up on Instagram. We also put up pictures of visiting the USS Salem, which was a cruiser that never saw any battle, but it did rescue some people, I believe Jared told us, after an earthquake. And there were like 400 dead bodies that they had to put on the ship.
Right. It was utilized as a morgue.
Yeah. Basically, it was a floating morgue. And we didn't have a tour guide to take us around on the USS Salem, but we found out that Jared is a wealth of information when it comes to the different warships.
He certainly is.
I mean, they had all these models that were in it. It was basically a museum of the Navy because it had all of these different ships on there little models of them, and then it had uniforms. And, you know, I didn't know that there were all these different classes of different battleships and aircraft carriers and these cruisers and everything, because I just would call things either an aircraft carrier or a battleship. And he was like, no, this is a cruiser. It's not a battleship. It's got guns and everything on it still. But
right. And he basically gave us historical information on a ton of the different models that they had there.
And unbeknownst to me, because I just had it on our thing, because that's what he really wanted to do. So we knew that was our ultimate goal, was to go see that. I had no idea it was haunted, because I hadn't even bothered to look into it.
Right.
And we did a ghost hunt in Hoagsville at a church, which is going to be our next episode that we're going to share with you guys. And one of the guys that joined us for that was talking about different investigations that he's done with his group. And he's like, oh, yeah, we've investigated the USS Salem several times. That thing is haunted as all get out. And we're like, wait, what? Bonus, we'll look into that too and bring that to you guys in the future as well. We'd love to have you check out our website at historygoesbump.com. If you want to send us any feedback, you can do that at historygoesbump@gmail.com. And as we've been saying, check out our Instagram and please follow us there. We've been putting up a ton of pictures when we go on our trips and everything. It's a great way for you guys to get to go along with us when we're doing these trips.
Yep.
It's that time of the year, Kelly. We're coming up on our anniversary show. This is going to be our 8th anniversary.
My goodness.
8 years of History Goes Bump. And as all of you people who've been longtime listeners know, the way we celebrate that is by having a flash fiction contest. So the flash fiction contest is on. You can find all the information for that in the Spooktacular Crew. If you aren't in the Spooktacular Crew, you can still contribute. Basically, it's flash fiction, so it needs to be 1,000 words or less. If you go a little bit over, that's okay. We're looking for something that's creepy, horror, scary story, sci-fi, weird, something like that, but not over the top. Something that you wouldn't mind your teenagers reading. So, you know, kind of a light R, PG-13 kind of realm is what we're looking for.
Right. No gratuitous sex or
gore, that gore, kind of thing.
Things of that nature.
You have until midnight on September 9th, 2022 to get your entry in. We always have three winners, our first place, second place, and third place. Everyone gets a medal that wins, and then there's different logo gear that we send out to you guys, and your story gets read on the anniversary show. We also always read a couple of runner-up stories. So even if you don't win, you still might make it onto the anniversary episode. Send your entries to historyghostbump@gmail.com. We already have one, Kelly, so.
Yes, indeed.
We're off and running. Also, please subscribe to our YouTube channel. We got a great comment over there from Anthony. He says, yes, first comment. And this is under our recent Southgate Thompson House episode. I just want to say that I love you both. I've been listening since April of last year, and I've completely caught up, and I'm ready for more. You've combined two of my favorite things, and I will be a lifetime listener, and one day I will be able to support and maybe join y'all on an investigation one day in Texas. Wonder how close he is to Galveston, because I know that's probably our next destination in Texas.
Yeah, shoot us a line, Anthony.
I do tell everyone about this podcast, and anytime I tell my husband something new, he always says, you got that from your podcast, didn't you? I love that.
That's awesome.
I so love that. I do believe I live in a safely haunted house. I hear footsteps and catch things out of the side of my eyes sometimes. My hubby said that he's seen two kids, a boy and a girl, and an old man who sits on my chest when I sleep sometimes.
Yikes.
Can you imagine an old man sleeping on or sitting on top of you when you're sleeping?
No.
I want to dig into it, but I remember that you said not to investigate your own home, LOL. All that to really say thank you for creating a space for people like me and keep up the great work. If I was still on Facebook, then I would totally be a part of the crew. Well, thank you for sharing over here, Anthony, and for sharing the show and your wonderful, kind comments. And yes, we have said that it really is not a good idea to investigate your own home, but then we broke that rule, or at least Kelly did.
I did yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Because she thinks maybe we brought something home with us.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting while I was working yesterday. Typically, I work with my office door open because it is the warmest room in the house. And let's just say that my office door doesn't typically move by itself. And there were two instances while I was working at my desk that my office door moved open very purposefully. And obviously, we run the air all the time. I'm always in there 40 hours a week. And I've never experienced that before. And it happened two times. So then I did get a set of dowsing rods and start asking some questions. And I was getting immediate answers. So I don't know if somebody's just passing through or if somebody came home with us. While we were in Savannah, there was a portion when we were walking around that I had a very intense feeling. I didn't feel real great. I was getting that woo-woo vertigo kind of feeling in my head. My chest felt very heavy. So I don't know if I brought something home from there or what the situation is.
Yeah. And what's interesting, we kind of did a quick overview of Savannah because we were only there for a few hours in the morning before heading home for good. And so we were in the Colonial Park Cemetery. We drove through some of the squares so that we could show Jared what squares look like, because it's the only city in the country that I know of that is set up that way. When we went out to Bonaventure, but we did that after we'd gone down to the Riverwalk. So
correct.
I'm not sure. The area that we were at, for those of you who know Savannah, we were a little bit down from the Cotton Exchange, and I had actually never walked this far down in this direction of the Riverwalk. So on the one side, you have the Waving Girl statue that has like the little blanket or handkerchief that she's waving out to the ships. And then on the other end is the original power company. And I never even knew that was down there because we just never walked that far before. We'd usually go about halfway and then you're tired and you're like, okay, let's head on out. So this time we started down walking towards that end. And I'm going to post this up on Instagram too. They have at least one of the original, I don't know what you call it, from the power plant, one of the towers from it.
Yeah, like a smokestack.
Yeah, a smokestack. That's what it was. Yeah. So they had one of the original ones is still there. And it's just a really neat area down there. So I'm like, I don't know what you, I mean, obviously the whole city of Savannah is haunted as heck. So who knows if they just said, hey, these look like fun chicks, I'll go home with them. But
looks like a nice family. And I like dogs because we had the girls with us. So
and it's the first time they've ever been on a road trip and they did amazing.
Yeah, they did very well.
Yep, they went on the ghost tour in Salem with us, and Riley got to ride up in her new backpack, and she did really good because she's a little unsure around people that she doesn't know. So when people ask, she's cute as heck, so everybody wants to touch her, but we're like, probably not a good idea because she's not going to bite people, but she sounds like she's going to. She'll bark and...
Yeah, she gets an aggressive little bark going.
Yeah.
Once she gets to know you, she's fine.
Yep, you're her best friend, but... when she's first getting to know people, but she was real good. She just sat up on the backpack and didn't say a peep to anybody. Was real quiet during the whole tour. There was even a little chihuahua or something across the way that was just losing his mind and anybody who walked past him, and she didn't even bark back at him.
She was a good girl.
She was. Want to share this email from Thomas. He wrote, hey crew, great podcast. I really enjoy all the history and wild tales that come with it. In your most recent podcast at the British Museum, you mentioned the Nimrod collection. That caught my attention because I've been to the ruins of Nimrod. I was a combat engineer in Iraq, 2007 to 2009, and we had a mission to pull security for some archaeologists and surveyors. Well, I got a chance to explore all the ruins, statues, cuneiform tablets that were still around. It was a cool experience, and I got a lot of pics. Sadly, Nimrod doesn't really exist anymore because ISIS blew it up and bulldozed it a few years later.
Ugh. So upsetting.
He says, keep up the great work. So thank you, Tom, or as he says, Tommy, for writing us that. And thank you for your service.
Yes, thank you very much. And actually, I do, on that note, have to mention, we happened upon another happy accident when we were down at the Riverwalk in Savannah. We happened upon the Nine Line Store and Black Rifle Coffee, which are both companies that are veteran-owned and operated, and we have a few shirts from them. And also, I love their coffee, and Jared's a huge fan. So that was very cool.
Yeah, we'd already heard that they had a store in Savannah, so we were going to look for it, but we didn't realize that it was right there, and we just looked up and went, oh, look at the sign, Black Rifle Coffee.
Perfectly perfect.
It was. And one of the other happy accidents we had is we ended up in Sleepy Hollow.
Yes, indeed. We were traveling along, and you know how that GPS will tell you, oh, there's a crash coming up. Do you want to take an alternate route? Well, we did that 3 different times during that particular drive, and
we looked up at the sign, and I was like, Tarrytown. And all of a sudden, Jared in the back seat goes, wasn't that another name for Sleepy Hollow or something? And I was like, well, I know it's right next to it. So I looked it up, and it was like 2 miles away.
It was awesome. We were so excited.
I was very stoked because I really wanted to go. But when we originally looked to see where it was along the route, it was going to be an hour out of our way. And I was like, do we want to add another 2 hours on? We're like, no, we'll just stick to what we're doing. But
yeah, we were bopping from place to place pretty quickly. We certainly could have used quite a bit more time, but, you know, we have to work with my work schedule and being able to take time off. Mm-hmm. And so it was challenging to find enough time to take it all in. So we certainly could have used more time, especially in places like Salem and Gettysburg, but it was a great trip.
Yeah. And the whole reason we ended up doing that is because I don't like flying as it is. So I'm like, if I can drive somewhere, I was like, I'd prefer to do that, especially nowadays. It just so many canceled flights and everything else. So I was like, we're going to drive it. And I've always wanted to go to Sleepy Hollow. We have done an episode on that and the Headless Horseman. So you'll have to look back in our archives because I don't remember what episode number it is. But they really embrace it there. All their street signs have the Headless Horseman on them. The school is Home of the Headsman. That's their mascot. And they even had a banner up that they're getting ready to have the Headless Horseman 10K in October. And I was like, oh, I'd love to do that.
So cool.
We want to thank you guys for tuning in to this episode. I've been your host, Diane.
And this has been Kelly.
You take care now.
Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by our executive producers.
Dispatches from the Grave Digger.
First of all, we want to thank Claire Manano for your one-time donation. Anybody who sends us a one-time donation at the $5 and above level, we will send you out a folder of bonus casts. Claire, I need your email so that I can send that out to you. So please message us at historyghostbump@gmail.com and let me know what your email is and I'll get that out to you. Also want to welcome back into the cemetery, Rita Whittington. We're going to be putting you under a marble headstone. And Caitlin Curry, you're going back into a chess tomb. And welcoming into the cemetery for the first time, Mike Kajori. I hope I said that right. It's K-O-J-O-O-R-I. We're going to be putting you in the niche wall. And thank you to the four of you for putting Mort back to work. We had to lay him off in July. We had no business for him in July. So thank you for getting him working again.
That makes Mort's heart go pitter-pat.
Yes, thank you so much for supporting the show. We really could not produce this show without our executive producers.
Want to keep the spooks away? Give us a review.
And also push cultural barriers.
Barriers? You mean boundaries? For many, this isn't the unusual Nope. The Civil War brought discretion?
It brought discretion.
I'm still tired from our trip. I have not recovered yet.
I mean, we did do 9 states in 8 days.
I know. Confederate Lieutenant... The civil rights movement was robust here with marshes and...
Marshes? I didn't know they created marshes during the civil rights movement. And you certainly wouldn't want to have a sit-in in a marsh.
Certainly not. You have a wet booty.
All the remains were these ruins from the Messine shops. Despite not being in use, the hotel was added to the National Restorer. It is believed that Sherman's troops used the house as a barracks during the Union occupado. It was during the Union occupado. It is believed that Sherman's troops used the house as a barracks during the I can't do the Union.
The second floor bedrooms were turned into dormitories. Blah, 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 blah. These materials included handmade bricks and hand sewn
hand sewn support beams. Wow, that's amazing.